Okay, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the session. So this morning, what I want to be looking at is running your AD in Windows Azure. Having said that, I'm also going to talk a little bit about the Windows Azure AD, as it used to be called. But of course, Microsoft are brilliant at renaming things. So it went from the Windows Azure AD, as in WAD, to the Microsoft Azure AD, as in MAD. So things have changed slightly, but apart from the name, things are changing very, very rapidly in the Microsoft Azure Active Directory space. So I'm going to start off with actually just setting the scene. What's the difference? Then I'm going to ask the question is, why might you actually want to run your Active Directory in Windows Azure? All right. And one of the reasons may be that you're using it as a development environment. All right. So that's a good reason for putting it up there. And there are other reasons, but you need to ask the question is, do I really, really need to do this? Okay. Having decided you want to do it, what I want to cover are the design considerations and the options. All right. So should it be a GC? Should it be an RODC? Et cetera, et cetera. And then I want to go through what we need to do to actually deploy it into the Azure Fabric and actually get it up and running. The demos I'm going to do, it's going to be, I'm going to take you through the steps, and you know, it's like those cooking programs, and here's one I did earlier, because for us to wait for everything to happen, we'd have to be here until, well, not that long actually, but we'd need a couple of hours to cover it. But I've already got an AD running, and what I want to do is take you through the steps of getting there, what we need to do, availability sets, networks, and so on. First of all, how many of you are currently using Microsoft Azure? Okay, so that's probably less than 25% of the audience. So just a quick reminder of what it's all about. We have the Azure platform, which does compute, it does storage, it does database. And then in terms of compute, you've got web roles, worker roles. Those are very much about developing applications for Azure. So web role is really a web front end. The really great thing about it is you can instantaneously scale it. So suddenly, you know that you're going to be hit with huge demand next Monday because your ticket sales open. You can scale up web roles. And you can actually do it automatically these days, so on-demand scaling. You've also got then websites, which everyone knows what a website is, and then virtual machines. Okay. What's really great is if you do a hybrid, you do a combination of the Windows Azure platform roles, like web roles, worker roles, and then you have things like your SQL database, etc., all sitting there in virtual machines. Right, and of course, you could have your Windows Active Directory as well. Got storage and blobs, tables, and queues. I'll mention a little bit of difference of those later. But in terms of running virtual machines, and we're going to be running Active Directory in the virtual machine, we're only concerned with blobs, binary large objects, and that's where our VHD files go. And then you've got the SQL as well. You've got then a whole raft of series services. And one of those services is the Microsoft Azure Active Directory. How do we talk to this guy? Pretty much any way you like. So your dev guys can go right from development tools, right? And what I would say is if you're going to start using for production, is what you've got to do is push the dev guys back. Because this was very much a platform for dev, right? And it's dev guys who got used to sort of automatically loading things straight up there. And do you really want them loading straight into your production environment? Probably not. You need to get control back and control your deployments into the Azure Fabric. And then you've got PowerShell. You've got all sorts of management tools for actually interfacing into the Fabric itself. In terms of Active Directory, Active Directory has now become an umbrella name. So on-premise, we have the Windows Azure Active Directory, which is WAD, and we used to have WAD, but of course now we've gone MAD, all right, with the rename of the Microsoft Azure Active Directory. What's the difference between them? Windows Active Directory, on-prem, you host the infrastructure, you manage the data, It has certain services like Active Directory Federation services, lightweight directory services, the certificate services, and so on, all those sort of services that we can install and use in the Active Directory space. But we're looking after the whole thing. Now, if we go across to the Microsoft Azure Active Directory, basically Microsoft looks after it for you, right, in the data center. You still look after the data, right? But they're looking after the overall fabric and infrastructure. It's hosted across multiple data centers, very, very high availability, right? And, of course, what you've got to realize is that this is really the Office 365 directory. It's a very proven directory, as in availability. And when people will say, oh, yeah, but is the cloud safe? One of the things I say is what you've got to consider is the amount of investment organizations are making in the cloud. And if you think about what Microsoft is investing in the cloud, right, they can't afford for things to go wrong. All right, so they're looking very high availability, very high security. They've got to. They're betting their company on it. They're spending billions and billions of dollars. So it's an interesting way of actually approaching it and saying, is it secure enough for us? Is it highly available enough for us? And the answer is probably yes. It's probably way more secure than you can achieve on premises. And sorry, if you work for the government, I apologize now because I'm sure you're more secure. But what we've got with the MAD directory is you're still managing the data, but services have changed. It's about authentication, and it's about authentication using the industry standard protocols for federation. Right? So we're used to WS Federation, we're used to SAML. Right, those were enterprise, but and now people are bringing their consumer devices and they want to use them on premises, and therefore we've got to cater for other authentication protocols like OpenID Connect, like OAuth 2. So OAuth 2 is becoming the protocol for authentication against web services. So any REST services are probably authenticated with OAuth 2. So we've got to take that into account. And then we've got this thing called Access Control Service, which is a sort of, if you like, it's an identity bridge or broker. So if you wanted to use social identity like Google, Facebook, etc., ACS will do it for you. I worry about the intricacies of that. I'll show you that in a second. So in terms of the Azure directory, as I say, it is an Office 365 directory. You are a tenant in a multi-tenanted space. There is a premium version. There's a free version and there's a premium version. With the premium version, they describe it as identity as a service, or IDAS. And what you need for that is the enterprise or EA agreement to actually use premium. Premium does nice things like password resets. So we can actually password reset with a password portal in the cloud. Today, we can sync passwords up to the cloud. This month, we'll be able to sync in preview passwords down from the cloud. So now, somebody can change the password on their phone, and it gets synced back into the corporate network and actually is managing the part. So we've got the password synchronized completely back into CorpNet. In terms of using AD, we can access it through the management portal. We can access it through REST APIs. And simplest form, if you don't know what a REST API is, just think about it, is it's a way of accessing a web service using HTTP protocol. Right, so gets, puts, right? Very, very simple to use. We've got a graph API which allows us to get a hierarchy out of the Active Directory so we can actually get the structure of someone, so their manager, the manager's manager, etc. So we've got that. And then if you want, you can synchronize your own users up into the Windows Azure Active Directory. And then in terms of authentication, you can sync to your Azure subscription, Office 365. So you can, your apps, there's a whole application gallery. And this, I mean, I could tell you that there's 1,002 applications in the application gallery, but if I demoed it to you, there might be 1,025 apps in there now. They're very aggressively adding applications. So if you want to allow your users to access applications from other organizations, then it's a very simple way of doing it through this platform and the application gallery. And then, of course, when you sign up, you get a rather strange name. So John Smith at your domain, all right, whatever you choose, all right, on Microsoft.com. But then having got that, you can put your own domain names up into the space. So you can have John Smith at yourdomain.com, etc. So the access control service is this identity broker. So rather than having to worry about how do I authenticate against Google? How do I authenticate against Yahoo? Microsoft Live ID, or it's now called the Microsoft account, but it still shows as Live ID in ACS. How do I manage Facebook? You don't have to worry about that at all. What you can do is have an application that says, who will authenticate for me? It will be ACS. And then ACS acts as a broker and works out how to authenticate against these other services. So you can also have your ADFS if you have Federation server on-prem. Actually, how many of you run ADFS on-premises? Okay, so that's a good number, actually, probably about just under 25% of the audience. Okay, so you could have your ADFS trust ACS. Okay, so what I want to do is just give you a very, very quick demo of MAD. And so I've got, hopefully, my Azure portal is still up and running. And if we just go down here to Active Directory, I've got a couple of directories in here. There's this one here. I've got a bunch of users. Some of them have been configured locally. Some of them have been configured in the Windows, or it should be Microsoft Azure Active Directory, and some of them have been synchronized from on-prem. So these guys here, local Active Directory, are in my own AD, and the synchronization engine has put them up into the Azure portal. In terms of applications, what I can do is I can actually choose to add an application. So we can add an application my organization is developing. So this is going to authenticate against an application that we're developing. Or you can use the application gallery. So the application gallery itself, I have no idea how many applications it has today. That's interesting. Come on. Azure, there we go. It's being very slow. So I told you it was 1,002. It's now 1,371. Okay. And there's two ways of doing it. These applications could be federated, right? There's only about 15 that federate at the moment. Alternatively, what we can do is we can actually simply store the username and password for the user in the Azure Fabric. Right. So when they go to one of these applications, that's automatically passed through. Right. So we've now got a single point where all your users, you've got your storage of the credentials for all these different websites. So effectively, it gives you a single sign-on experience. And then I can publish these applications to users or to groups of users. Okay, I'm just going to give you a look at the authentication experience. If I bring up in private browsing, and I'm just going across to SharePoint, which is attached to ACS, all right, so the access control service. So how do I want to authenticate against SharePoint? I could use a Live ID, or I could use a Windows or Microsoft Azure AD account, and you can customize this. So if you've got a premium if you've got a premium account, you can actually customize this portal, and so it looks like your own company portal. So now I could log in with that guy, or I could log in, for instance, with a Google account, and what's the count on this? Oh, yeah. Oops. So remember, this is all about federated identities. So you're going to be running claims aware applications, right? Or applications that are going to use OAuth. So this is actually now authenticated through ACS against Google. And the claims that are in there are coming back from Google itself. Right. So it just gives you an idea. And what I would say is you really need to look at the Azure Active Directory as an adjunct to your own Active Directory. So now, how do we manage all our users' access to all these different applications in partner organizations by maybe synchronizing our accounts up into there, and they go through the Azure portal to actually go off to those other applications. So rather than federating from our own organization, we use the Azure Active Directory as a stepping stone. So let's just go back to our demo. And just in case everything failed, I've actually got the demos recorded, just in case I lost the link to the internet or something. Which does happen occasionally. So running AD in the Microsoft Azure virtual machines. So why might you want to do it? Well, some applications you deploy may require AD. So you may say, oh, I wanted to deploy that app, but that app relies on AD, and it needs AD. Okay. So we could put a VPN in, and we could connect that app to an on-prem AD. However, there may be issues with that, and I'll come back on those. So that could be a reason for doing it. You may decide, actually, I'm deploying lots of VMs up there, and do you know what I really love? Group policy. And what I want to do is deploy group policy against those VMs. So I've actually controlling security, lockdown, all the other bits and pieces I want to do through group policy. Deploy an AD. Doesn't necessarily have to be your AD that's deployed. It could be, well, it's your new forest, which is actually just going to do the lockdown on those VMs. You could say that I want to use all the server 2012, great management, you know, single point of management. And that's another reason for deploying it. So what do we do? We can have a hybrid or we can have a cloud-only deployment. Well, cloud-only is the easy one. It's an isolated directory, new forest, up in the cloud, and it just does what it needs to do to those VMs in the cloud. A hybrid is where we've got part of our corporate AD up in the Azure fabric. Okay, so what we'll need, obviously, is a VPN link so that we can actually replicate AD changes up into that space. So there's the sort of two options. Actually, I've just put a note in there. Cloud services need to authenticate users from the corporate directory. Okay. That's fine, but you might consider using federation instead, all right? Which means you don't have to have this link. You know, if we're going to be authenticating, we don't have to have that link replicating those changes up there. This could be totally isolated using federation to authenticate. So it's a consideration. Okay, so in terms of AD design considerations, it's all those great things that we've always considered, except remember, we're running our DCs in VMs. How many of you run DCs in VMs right now? Okay, so that's probably a third of the audience. How many of those who do that have actually read the Microsoft document about running DCs in VMs? That's probably about half of that number, okay? There are one or two little issues that you need to deal with. When we run this thing, we are going to run it in a virtual machine, and that virtual machine, by default, will have a drive on it, which will be cached. All right? You do not want your DIT and your sysfold on a cached drive. So what you have to do is create another drive, which is always a good thing to do anyway, but you need to create another drive which has no caching on it to put the DIT and the sysfold, or create a couple of drives if you want. You can put your DIT on one and your sysfold on the other, depending how you want to do your design. We need to deal with IP addressing and also name resolution. We'll have to take that into consideration. Next question is, should your DC be a GC? Should it be an RODC? Do we do separate forests with trusts? What about geo-distributed DCs? So we have one DC in one site, another DC in another site. How do we manage that? All right. And then finally is just thinking about optimizing the deployment for network traffic. Again, another consideration. So, first thing is, we're going to talk about virtual machines and running. And what we have is a number of states for our virtual machines on the Azure platform. It could be running, which is obvious. It's running, it's up, and it's all happy. And there's our DC running away. We can shut down the guest OS, all right? So whatever OS you're actually running up there, you just shut it down as though you would normally, all right? And what happened there, guest OS is shut down, but the VM still exists, and therefore you're still charged for it. So it doesn't matter, all right, whether that VM is actually running, all right, or it's shut down, as the guest operating system is shut down in it, you are still charged. So beware of that. And then you can delete this thing, and what happens there, the VM is deallocated from the Microsoft Azure Fabric, all right, and you're no longer charged for the VM. The VHDs are not automatically deleted, so they're still there. So if you wanted to rebuild that VM, you could do so. All right, so we can recreate it using an existing disk. Obviously, you're going to be charged for the VHD storage. Now, there was a new thing that came in last year, and this is called shutdown. All right, I wish they'd called it a different name. All right, so this is nothing about shutting down the guest OS. This is shutting down the VM in the Azure Fabric. And you can see why I'd like them to call it a different name, but they didn't. All right, so what happens now? If I choose shutdown, the VM is deallocated from the fabric, all right, so you are no longer charged for it. And what we can do is we can start it using the start button, and it's reprovisioned automatically into the fabric. If I delete, what happens is the VM goes, all right, and I end up with a VHD. So what I have to do is basically rebuild the virtual machine, attach the VHD, and off I go again. All right? Whereas in this situation, I shut it down, deallocate it out the fabric, do start, and back it goes into the fabric. All right? And this is great for dev, test, demand burst, disaster recovery. But it does have an impact on AD. And the reason it has an impact on AD is in Server 2012, in the hypervisor was included a VM generation ID, GUID. All right? So sitting in the hypervisor is this generation ID GUID, and it's exposed through the BIOS up to the running virtual machine. And it's set during import, copy, or application snapshot. Oh, I should have changed that. Should have updated the slide. No longer snapshots. What are they? Checkpoints. Yes. So you've got to change the. You just learn all the terminology, and then you have to use something different. All right. So they're now checkpoints rather than snapshots. So when the DC boots, what it does is it looks in its Active Directory where it's stored the VM generation ID GUID. It looks in the ACPI BIOS, the field there, and it says, oh, they're the same. Everything's happy, and off I go. Oh, they're different. There must have been a snapshot, all right, or a checkpoint. Or there must have been, you know, a copy involved, i.e., I've gone back in time. Therefore, if I come up, we could have a USN bubble, or replication could be completely mucked up, or I could do SID reuse. So what it does is it basically goes through an AD restore process. All right? Now, guess what? Whenever you shut down and start, the VM generation ID GUID changes, and you have to take that into account. And I'll come back to that in a little bit more. But just go through this. What happens is the invocation ID GUID changes, which means this database is now seen as a new source for replication. Right? So everyone else sees it, or if you're other DCs, they see it as a new source for replication. So replication works beautifully. The RID pool's discarded, just to make sure we don't get SID reuse. All right? and it does a non-authoritative restore of sysvol. And that is a little killer, which I will come to. So, this VM generation ID changes happens during service healing. All right. What's service healing? Basically, everything's working in the fabric of Azure, and the fabric crashes. All right? You know, it's just run on ordinary servers. They're not special servers. Well, they are special servers, but you know, everyone runs special servers these days. So the fabric crashes. So what will happen is the service healing will happen, and what will happen is a new VM will automatically spin up for you, and your VHD is attached to it, and off you go again. Generation ID GUID changes then. Host servicing. So Microsoft need to shut down and service the host. And what happens is they shut down. They push your VM into another server, shut this one down, and service it. Right? Again, it changes down there. And then shut down and start operations. Right? And any DC affected, it's going to go through this AD restore process. Right? If all your DCs are affected, they all go through the AD restore process. AD, perfect. All seen as new replication sources. Everything works beautifully in terms of AD replication. Sysvol goes through non-authoritative restore. This DC is saying, I'm non-authoritative. I'm going to wait for an authoritative partner to replicate to me. And this guy's saying exactly the same. And this guy's saying exactly the same. So what you've done, you've just killed Sysvol. All right? So what you have to do is manage that. And for production cloud-only AD deployments, then what you do is you make sure your DCs are in the same availability set. Now, what is an availability set? If you choose two, three DCs to be in the same availability set, Microsoft will say, ha-ha, I know what you want. You want one of these DCs to always be available, don't you? So if we're going to do service healing, well, hopefully this bit of the fabric crashes, but we make sure that we don't run both of your DCs on the same point of failure. All right? So now we've got one DC running here, one DC running here. If that one crashes, this DC is still running. All right? This one gets reallocated somewhere. All right? Comes up, non-authoritative sysvol, bang, up and running happily. And so the general rule, if you're going to run it in production, is to distribute across different, you want to deploy three DCs for safety. Right? And then you have this concept, in terms of service healing, that's fault domains. And then you have this concept of update domains. Right? And what will happen is, again, we're, in terms of updating, Microsoft will, if you're in the same availability set, they'll make sure you're on two different parts of the fabric, and they will not update them at the same time. So they update this part, and then they'll update this part. So that's to be taken into account. In a hybrid environment where you've got on-prem DCs, you could always do the authoritative restore from on-prem. And, of course, how much replication is there in an authoritative restore of sysvol? Very little. Because what happens is it basically looks all the files that are already there, does an MD5, checks them, and says, oh, they're all okay, and there they are, back again. Right? But we've got to go through that process. Now, if you're deciding to use this for dev, right, single DC, absolutely no problem. It's not going to be affected, because who cares whether sysvol is authoritative or not? It's got no one to replicate to. Right. And in fact, the system's clever enough to say, only one DC in my domain. I don't need to go through this process of checking the VM generation ID GUID. I can't have gone back in time because I'm the only one. Right? Well, I can have gone back in time, but who cares, because I am the only DC. Right? But if you're going to run multiple DCs in a test environment up there, then what you're going to have to do is say, when I bring these things up, I'm going to have to do an authoritative restore of sysvol. It's not difficult. It's a matter of setting a couple of flags and off you go. And there's a good KB article about doing that. But just bear in mind that you do need to do that. Should the DC be a GC? And the answer to that is, in a single domain or cloud-only environment, absolutely no argument about that at all. In a hybrid multi-domain environment, it's probably yes. All right. And what we've got to think about is why have we got an AD up in the cloud? All right. So what's going to happen is we're going to have a DC up there. Why is it up there? All right. It could be deploying group policy, but it could be that we're using it for authentication. All right. And if it's not a GC, then what we've got is an issue with universal group membership. So what we're going to have to do is come across the wire to do our authentication. All right. So in that situation, what you could find is that your logon latency is unacceptable. You'll find some applications are very sensitive to logon latency. So you start the logon process, and it's a while before you come back with a token. And this guy says, I've given up on you already. All right? And so you need to consider logon latency. So if you've got to come in, you've got to go down to a GC, etc. All right? One thing you could consider is, does anyone remember universal group membership caching? Yeah, okay. Did anyone use it? Not a single hand. All right. I, to be honest, I would avoid using it. All right. You are not charged for traffic into Azure. You're charged for traffic out of Azure. Are you going to be making lots and lots of changes up in Azure? Probably not. So the main of the traffic is going to be into Azure. So, you know, replicating a GC up there, et cetera, to begin with, not a big issue. If it is a big issue, if it's a huge GC, then use install from media, all right, and do it that way. Or install on-prem and ship your VM up there. All right, that's another option. We'll come to those options in a moment. Should it be an RODC? And everyone's going, yeah, I'm not going to put my Active Directory up in Azure. And then you've got to ask yourself, what was an RODC designed for? All right. It was designed, anyone want to say why we had an RODC? Yeah, for secure.
Less secure location.
What type of less secure location? Physically, yeah, so physically less secure location. So someone could come along and steal it, all right? And what you didn't want is you didn't want the crown jewels on it, all right? How many of you are worried that if you put your Active Directory up into Azure, someone's going to come along and steal your database? Nobody? I bet you, how many of you are security officers? Anyway, bottom line is, if that's your concern, someone's going to steal it, don't put your AD up into Azure anyway. But the rule is, really, don't use an RODC, because it's not designed for this situation. And the problem with RODCs, although we can control which attributes replicate up there, etc., you know, it's not about that. It's what we've got to consider is the fact that if we put RODCs up there, we will have known and unknown compatibility issues. All right. So we've got something up there that needs to write to the AD. And what's going to happen is it's going to try and write to this RODC, and then it's going to get an LDAP referral, and it's going to come back on-prem. And it can fail. A very typical one was, you know, you would want to write something into the AD. What would happen is you get a referral to a read-write DC, you'd write it, and then you'd check your closest DC to see if it had been written. And you'd say, oh, it hasn't been written. And you'd sit there spinning round and round and round in circles saying, hasn't been written. Well, it just hasn't replicated back across yet. So those little issues, and the trouble is, you know, you've got another whole raft of stuff you need to test if you deploy an RODC. And there is actually no reason for deploying an RODC, because if you don't trust the Azure Fabric with your AD, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's an RODC or an ordinary AD, you just don't put it there. So separate forests with trusts. You could do that. You can create a new forest in the cloud, establish trust at your on-premise DC. The pros is there's no AD replication across the VPN, but remember, we're being charged for outbound, so
you know, if we do all our changes here, there's very little traffic that we're going to be charged for, right? Because it's all going to be that way. The security, there is a distinct security boundary between on-prem and the cloud in terms of administration, right? So we do have totally separate administrators, separate schemas, etc. The cons of it, though, is that we've got authentication traffic across the VPN. And again, we've got this logon latency. So if we're relying on the trust to authenticate someone, all right, and we've got to go across the trust to do that checking, all right, and if you're going to do it, make absolutely certain Kerberos is being used, if you can, all right, because otherwise you're going to go across that trust all the time with NTLM traffic. And also a link failure is going to cause you, it's going to cause authentication failure. So again, another consideration. So, is it worth putting a separate forest up there? So you've really got to work out why you need your AD up there. And if it's about authentication, I would seriously be concerned about relying on authentication across the link. Whether it be that we don't put our own AD up there, we have our AD here, have to come across the link. Whether we don't put a GC up here and we've got to come across the link for the GC options. Whether we have two separate forests and we've got to come across the link for the trust. So be very, very careful about that. Whoops, pressed the wrong button. Okay, today, at the moment, if you go geo-distributed, all right, so you say, I'm going to put up in one data center, and I've got a DC in another data center, you have got to replicate through your on-prem. All right? So at the moment, there is no data-to-data center replication that you can leverage. Okay, and then in terms of, you obviously need to correctly define your AD sites and subnets. What you don't want is you don't want a client saying, oh, my favorite site to log in at is on the cloud. Well, you might want that, but then choose it by design. Don't choose it by mistake. So you've got to make sure your site link costs are appropriate. And obviously, you know, if a site goes down in your own on-prem, what you don't want is suddenly the cloud one becoming the shadow for it. So just choosing those site link costs appropriately to make sure things are going to work properly. Okay, so what we need to do, first of all, in step by step, we need to create storage to hold your OS and your data VHDs. Okay, so let's actually go and look at that. And I'm going to start off by going into the fabric. And what I'm looking for here is I'm looking for storage. And basically, you create a storage account. If you don't create one, one will be automatically created if you create a virtual machine. All right? But you really want to know where things are going. So I have a storage account here. And let's just go back there. Notice my storage account. This is in Western Europe. This is in East US and Western Europe. And what you will want to make sure is when you deploy your domain controllers, all right, you don't deploy your domain controllers in Western Europe and have their VHDs in the States. That would not be a good idea. So we need to make sure we keep everything nicely together. And I will come back to how we do that shortly. So if we look at this storage here, and we look at the dashboard on that, notice there's URLs to get to blob, table, and queues. Tables and queues are used for communication between front-end web roles and worker roles. So we put information in the queue and it gets to the back-end role. And we don't need to worry about that. We're into blobs. Blobs is binaries, big binary large objects, and that's where we put our VHDs. Okay, so, but notice this URL. It means you can get to this storage from absolutely anywhere, provided you have the management access key. So I can generate management access keys. Oops, it's been recorded. That's a shame. Well, you can't see what the end is, and I will change them. But there's the management access key, and what I can do is I can use things like Cloud Explorer, or this guy here, sorry, Azure Storage Explorer, and I can actually connect up into the cloud, so I can actually connect into the storage, and we can do it from absolutely anywhere, provided you have those keys, which you didn't see. And so if I go back to my, on here, if we just go back one step and we choose XTS again and look in containers, and under containers, I've got my VHDs, and I've got VHDs for my domain controllers, and notice I've actually got a VHD down here for a domain controller, which is 127 gig, and I've got a VHD here for a domain controller, which is only 10 gig. That is my non-cacheable, where I've put my DIT and my sysfol. Okay? If I go up to the VMs themselves, and so we can go up to the VM here, and under virtual machines, I can look at the disks, and I can see where the disks are actually attached. And notice that on my DC1, I have a disk containing the Windows operating system, its read-write cache, and then on DC1, I have a host cache of none. And again, that's where I go, and actually, this is where I'm going to put the DIT and sysfol. So, in terms of storage, we create a storage account, we can put VHDs up into that storage account, right, and they can be attached to VMs. Okay? So, the next thing we need to consider is, let me just go back, is we need to create a network, all right? We need to create a virtual network to put these things on, all right? Because if we're going to be using them, we need to be able to get at them. We need to know where they are on the network. All right, so we're creating a virtual network to support that. We'll need to deploy the VMs and the operating system, attach the data disks. The VM should be in the same availability set. Do you remember the availability set where we've got to make sure that we've got everything together? All right. Again, I'll come back on that shortly. And remember about the non-cache disk, otherwise you will end up in trouble. You then install ADDS. How do you install it? Well, we'll come to various options for installing it. And then we deploy other VMs and join them to the AD. And you can do the whole thing with PowerShell. Right? In fact, I mean, I could have actually run a bit of PowerShell at the beginning, but I didn't dare risk it. And everything would be deployed and ready by now. Maybe. And if it wasn't, my demos would all go wrong. So I actually started the VMs separately, but you can, as I say, you can do the whole thing with PowerShell. Okay, so what I want to do now is, that's the storage demo. So I don't want to do the storage demo now. We've done that. I want to talk about creating virtual networks. Okay, and what we do is we create it using a private address range. And you can choose what the private address range is. You can choose to subnet. So we create this address space. We subnet it down. So you could have a front-end web network. You could have an Active Directory network. You could have a back-end SQL network where you deploy your different VMs, depending on their role. And they all connect together. You can then connect your virtual network to on-prem through a VPN gateway, and then you can use your own DNS, and you will need to use your own DNS if you're supporting Active Directory. So there is an Azure DNS. However, if you're going to deploy Active Directory, it must be an AD-compatible DNS, i.e. supporting all the SRV records and so on. So we've got to be able to do that. So how do we create this thing? Well, what you do is you basically specify an address space. So I've said I'm going to use the 10.30.0.0/16. All right. That's my space up there. And I've got three subnets, which I've named as I want to. So I made it really easy. So 10.30.1.0/24. We need a subnet for the gateway, if we're going to use a gateway, so it needs to be on its own subnet, the gateway. And then what we'll do is we will need to specify the IP of the VPN device, which is this guy down here. So we will need, Azure is going to allocate that IP address, but we're going to have to specify what that one is. Right? We're also going to need to specify our address space, which is local. Why does Azure need to know that? It needs to know that to be able to route to it. All right, so in terms of the being able to route to, we need to specify this local network down here. And that's it. That brings you up with a VPN all up and running. In terms of the gateway, we can enable the gateway. So this is actually showing a gateway that's just been enabled. There's not a lot of traffic on it at the moment. So we've got DNS servers in cloud, on-prem, and we've got an AD which sits up in Azure, and it sits on-prem as well. So we've got DNS points up there in the cloud, and we've got DNS pointing down here, right, as our secondaries. Okay, so I'm going to go now and do a little demo of how we actually sort of set up this guy. So let's get out of that. Okay, so let's go across down to the networks, and this is where we create the networks. Now, what we'll need is when we create a network, we need this thing called an affinity group. Right? This is not like an availability set. An availability set is where we put two virtual machines in the availability set, and they say, we know that you need to have one of these guys available, so we'll put them over across different fault domains and update domains. What an affinity group is, and I'm going to go down here to settings to actually show you this. So an affinity group, and we give it any old name we like. What should we call it? TechEd. So an affinity group of TechEd, and you decide on the region it's in. Now, these are the regions where the Microsoft data centers are. Right? You cannot control which data center your VMs are deployed to. Right? So I can say, I'm going to deploy to Southeast Asia. How many data centers are there in Southeast Asia? If I knew and told you, I would have to eliminate you. So data centers are really meant to be secret locations, all right? Apart from the videos Microsoft made of some of their data centers. But if we go to Eastern Asia, we don't know. There might be one data center, there might be three. Right? But what we can do is create this affinity group that says, I want all the things that are in this affinity group to be in the same data center. Right? So I can get my storage and my VMs and my virtual network all sitting in the same data center. Right? So that's why we create these guys. And I'm not going to bother creating it because I've already got a number. So let's go back to networks. And then if we go to new on networks, just to show you how easy it is, we go custom create. We give it a name. What should we call it? Yeah, it's the Den Haag network. Affinity group we're going to use? Let's use just Asia services, which is probably totally inappropriate for a Den Haag network, but never mind. On from there, and then your DNS servers. Now, this is a little bit chicken and egg-ish, right? If you deploy DCs up into the Azure cloud, right, onto a subnet, you don't know the IP address of those DCs until they've been deployed. Right? So what you have to do is you have to come back and fix this, right, once you know where your servers are. One very exciting thing Microsoft did to you was, actually, you couldn't come back and fix this. So once you deployed a VM, you couldn't change the DNS servers, which was a little bit difficult, to say the least. Your first DC or your first VM on a subnet will probably go in at 0.4, as in 4 for the host. So you could risk it, but there's no guarantee in stone that it will always be that way. So what you really should do is take into account, you can deploy this guy, figure out where it is, and come back and modify the DNS, which you can now do. But you couldn't do that at one point in time. So the next thing you can do is you can say, I'm going to configure a point to site. And this here is where I'm going to come from my network in the cloud. And I'm going to come down, and I'm going to come down to individual computers in my organization. And you think, why would I do that? Well, think of a dev team. Right, and you want the dev team to be able to get up into the cloud. You don't want to set the VPN up today for everyone to be able to go up and down to the cloud, the whole network completely routable. You just allow it to come down to these dev machines. Or you might say, actually, do you know what? I need my application that's running up here, I need it to be able to get access to the SQL server, and that's all I want it to do. So here we can use this thing here, point. Well, it's really site, because site in the cloud, to a point in your premises. Right? Or you can go for this one, which of course is a complete VPN down into your corporate network. And to be able to do that, you need to define a local network. And all the definition of a local network is the IP address of your VPN, right? Which is your public VPN address, and your address space. Right, so that's all you need to define there. Let's not bother with either of those. Oh, and use ExpressRoute. This is new. This is the exciting thing about doing demos on Azure these days. You can go in and you can suddenly go, oh my goodness me, what's that new feature they've just added? ExpressRoute is using an MPLS network or something like that, so a secure network that you've already got. And there's a number of providers that now hook in with the Azure cloud. And if you've got an MPLS, it's probably possibly worth actually investigating as to whether you could connect through to the cloud service that way. And then what you do is you define an address space. And why not just do it? Let's just do it. I can choose on the 10, the 172, the 192 network. Let's just choose the 10. What should we do? 10.80. And that's a 10.80 network /16. And then subnet, and we can do web. We'll call that one the web, which is 10.80.10, and put a /24 on there. And so you go on. So add a subnet, and it, on it goes. And then finally, you can add a gateway subnet. Remember, the gateway needs to sit on its own subnet. And having done all that, you click OK, and in about 10 minutes, you will have your own virtual network. And having got a virtual network from previously, I've got my web farm virtual network. If I look at the dashboard on that, I can see where my servers are actually deployed on here. I have DNS servers, but I do not have on this, I do not have a gateway. If I go to my Net 100, I do actually have a gateway on Net 100. And having configured this, all I've had to do is basically define, I define my gateway subnet, I define my local network, and having done that, I create the gateway. Having created the gateway, what you end up with is a download VPN device script. And so you can, you know, Cisco, Juniper, and then you've got Microsoft Corporation down here, and you can use RAS on Server 2012 to actually have this as your gateway on-prem, your VPN termination point, and then it'll talk to that. And this, if we download the script on that, then it gives you the configuration that's actually needed. So just open that. You've got the configuration there that you need on. And although that's all that's in the list, if you take one of these, if you go and get one of these configuration scripts, and you've got a guy that really understands VPNs, and he reads through it, you can probably fix most VPNs to work, right? But the ones listed are the ones that Microsoft have tested. Okay, so that is our virtual network. So we now have a virtual network in place in which we can deploy our virtual machines. So let's go back to these slides for a moment. Okay, so how do we deploy our VMs? We need blob storage, right? And then we need to get somehow our VHDs up into blob storage. And we can upload these. And if you upload them, they've got to be fixed disks, so not dynamic disks, right? So you build them on Hyper-V, and then you upload into the cloud. Actually, having just said that, just worries me slightly, because I know that the idea was, could it be done with dynamics? And it may be today, this minute, or it might be in 10 minutes' time, support for dynamic disks. So you are, one of the exciting things about working Azure, it's evergreen. So there's an excitement every day working with Azure. Having just said it's fixed disk, I was thinking maybe that's too strong. It was fixed disks, a couple of weeks ago. and then your VM, you basically create a virtual machine and you attach it to your VHDs. Right? There is another way of doing it, and you can go create from gallery. And there's a whole raft of different VHDs you can use from gallery. And then you just basically create it from the gallery. You can put your own things into that gallery, but what you do is you need to generalize them with sysprep. So you could take, 2012 data center, you could build it in some way, and as long as you can sysprep it back, right, to an image, you can then put it in your gallery. And then, people can then deploy from gallery using your image, right? You can also put, if you've got a VHD with an operating system on it already, you can put that in the gallery as well. So you can pick up a VHD. And I've just got VM2 attached to that particular one. Okay. So this is very, very important. When you deploy a VM, right, it goes into what's called a cloud service. Right? And think about a cloud service as a space where this thing runs. Cloud service has an internal network, right? And you could deploy a VM into cloud service, into an internal network, and you wouldn't really care. It doesn't communicate to anything, except you can come into it over the internet. And what you've got is this endpoint mapping. So when you create a cloud service, you get a URL, which is yours, right? And then having come in, we can actually map from that URL into our DC, right? And we can do the mapping. We can basically, here, we've got remote desktop coming in. The public port is 57974, and the private port is 3389, right? And what it will do is it will map. And the way we can support multiple RDPs into multiple machines running in the same cloud service, right, is by just having different public port numbers for those RDP sessions. Now, so create a VM, goes into a cloud service, gets a public URL, right, so you can connect to it over the internet. If you don't want to do that, you can turn it off. Right, and how do you get to it? Well, with difficulty is the answer. Right, unless you've got an internal network. Right? So what I can do is I can connect my machines I deploy into this cloud service into different networks that I've created, virtual networks. And then I can communicate over the virtual network. So I could have my DCs deployed, turn off their port mapping, so you cannot get to them over the internet at all, and put in a jump server. Right? The jump server I could have, in over the internet if I wanted it, or I could have it in over VPN, come to the jump server, and then manage my DCs. So think about, if you're used to using jump servers, think about that model also in the Azure cloud. Okay, if I want DCs to be in the same availability set, and remember what an availability set is, it means you are telling Microsoft that I need one of these guys available. Right? So if you do that, those two DCs must be in the same cloud service. Right? You cannot have an availability set across cloud services. So they need to be in the same cloud service. Okay, so that's the cloud service itself. And then in terms of IP address allocation, the VIP assigned to the cloud service is yours forever, provided the cloud service remains alive. All right? And in fact, forget the VIP, forget the actual IP address, because that possibly could change in the future. But what's guaranteed is the URL that's generated for you generate at the point of time you create the cloud service. Now, the IP address for the VMs are actually dynamically assigned at deployment time. And it's a bit like DHCP. Only the main caveat and the difference is they persist for the lifetime of the VM. All right? So I deploy this DC. It gets an IP address, and it will be there forevermore, right? Unless I shut down the VM. Not shut down the guest operating system, shut it down, which means it's deallocated from the fabric. And when it goes back in, it could be at a different IP address, right? So this is another challenge that you've got if you've got this dev environment, all right? What you want to do is, if you've got DC1, DC2, DC3, right, you shut them down, deploy them in the same way as you deployed them in the first place, DC1, DC2, DC3, and they'll end up getting the same IP addresses. Not guaranteed, but pretty much for certain. Right? And but what you need to do is having redeployed, is check your DNS. Yes. Oh, okay. All right. Well, it's a new one on me. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So thank you very much for that. So you can reserve an IP with PowerShell, which actually makes an awful lot of sense because it's your network anyway.
It's impossible at creation. So if you don't give the command at creation of the VM, yep, it's not fixable afterwards. So
okay.
You have to give it while making.
Okay. So there they are. Good reason to create a VM with PowerShell. Right, and you can set the IP address at that point in time. Okay, as I say, this is such an exciting product because this probably happened within the last maybe hours, weeks, days, it was very interesting. Last year, I was presenting on a very similar topic at TechEd, and TechEd they were making huge changes. So, you know, the day before my presentation, the whole portal changed. lovely. But if you don't do that, just remember, if you reallocate, possibly different address, just check your DNS. That's all that needs to be done. So it is manageable. In terms of DNS service, we've sort of said that we need to deploy, find out what our address is, except if we deploy with PowerShell now and use this new feature where we can set an IP, and then having done it, we could go in and tune up our DNS servers. Okay, so how do we get ADDS up there? We create a new domain controller on-premise, upload the VHDs, that's one thing. We use install from media, right? So we take an IFM seed, right, which is basically a copy of the directory, and we get it up into Azure and install from media up there. We do a DC promo and replicate all the traffic across the VPN. Depends how big if you're doing a hybrid and you've got obviously a huge local directory, it's probably not the way to do it. But use DC cloning. DC cloning is new to 2012, right? And what you can do with DC cloning is basically you create your DC and then you clone it. And it's a bit like install from media, but rather than having the media separate from the DC, it's on the DC, right? And when we put it up into here and we've set it up for cloning, it says, oh, I'm a clone, right? And what it really is, it's all to do with the VM generation ID GUID. So what it will do is it will automatically say, oh, look, VM generation ID GUID has changed. Oh, I've got a cloning file. I'll just clone myself. So it comes up and does an AD restore effectively. So, you know, and that's the cloning is very, very efficient. And it's a great way of distributing DCs. But of course, it relies on your DCs being virtualized, and it relies on the hypervisor supporting the VM generation ID GUID. A VM shutdown and start with DNS, I think I've said all that. If you restart your VMs in the same order, there's a very good chance they'll have the same IP addresses. Okay, so what I want to do is...
How can you manage that?
In terms of...
Starting the VM in the same sequence, and also by patching, that you have a sequence...
No. If you... Okay, so if patching, right... If Microsoft are doing it and they're doing their update and their service healing and then it won't affect it at all. The IP address will remain the same. Right? It's only if you shut down, as in not shutting the operating system down, but you deallocate them from the fabric. So it's a dev environment. Right? So it's in case of a dev environment. When you've built the dev environment, you probably know which DCs you put in which order, and then when you rebuild it, you can just start them up in the same order. So it only really applies to the dev environment. In the production environment, then what we just need to do is make sure our DCs are across in the same availability set, and then they're not going to be they get deallocated and reallocated. They're not going to be done individually, and they'll come back. If Microsoft does service healing updates, host reallocation, anything like that, they will always have the same IP. Okay, let's actually go and create ourselves a virtual machine, and let's go back from there, and let's go up to. Oh, sorry, I'm wondering why the mouse is moving without. This is the video. So I'm thinking the mouse is moving without me moving the mouse. And I thought I'd left it here, so I was thinking, why is it back on the previous screen? Okay, so we go up to our virtual machines, and on our virtual machines, I've got my DCs, I've got a jump server, and I've got my SharePoint server running. So that demo I gave with SharePoint was actually SharePoint running in the cloud. That's with ACS. So what I go down here is new virtual machine, and I go from gallery. And 2012 R2 data center, but look what they're doing. You've got 2008 R2, SP1, SharePoint, trial, SQL, lots of different versions of SQL. And then, oh, you thought you got rid of Oracle, and back it comes. And then you've got Microsoft Dynamics, and then you've got Visual Studio as a dev environment. You've got SUSE Linux, you've got Ubuntu. And so it goes on. So, and this list gets bigger. So if you want a really quick deployment, you say, oh, I need to test something out on a SQL Server. 10 minutes, you will have a SQL Server up and running, and then you can access it. So let's, for this demonstration purposes, let's go for a data center. And then what I need is I need a virtual machine name. So we'll call it DC101. And I just need to decide what I'm going to be doing in terms of, if I go for basic, I can go up, on standard, I can go up to 8 cores, 56 gig of memory. Make sure you've got a big credit card. If you go for basic, you can, it's a more basic machine, all right? Watch we do. I'm not actually going to build it. So we go 8 cores, 14 gigs of memory. We need an administrator name, so we'll just use our favorite, admin, and it says you can't use that. I used to be a Linux guy, so we use root. So anything that sounds a bit admin-y, it doesn't like, so we just use AD admin. or we can use manager or something. So... think I hit the wrong key there. Yeah, I didn't thought that it wasn't going to work. Okay, so on from there. Now, why that's still spinning on there? Pending. What's pending? Didn't like that. A pending password. oh, this is a Windows Azure feature. I'll try something different. Contain upper and lower case. Okay, well, yeah, well, the first one did. And how about that? Okay, so this has decided at this stage not actually to work, which is, I've discovered, because I've been doing a lot of work with identity at the moment, and we've been doing all sorts of stuff with the new Azure directory, and we find at times things don't work, and rather than fight them and try and troubleshoot them, you just park them and come back to it the following day, and they do work. It's too common. Yeah, I thought it was, but at least it's working now. So this is obviously someone from Microsoft. Obviously, they've implemented new security, and they're doing a password check to make sure the password doesn't match the name of my dog, my wife, anything else. You know, so it's got all my PI information, so it can do that check. Oh, it doesn't like it. What is going on? It's too common. This is new. This is new. All right. This everyday game. Ah! Okay. It's too common. That is ridiculous. How can that be too common? Oh, well. Okay, and I don't like the comments they're making about my wife. Anyway, what wasn't, to be honest, an awful lot to show there, but what would happen is you go through this process. Having worked out what is not a common password, I say this is brand new, because I tested these demos yesterday, and that worked yesterday with that password. So this is brand new feature, this. Yeah, I shall write to Bill Gates. Don't call my wife. Come on. having done that, what I wanted to do is just show you that you need to be in the same cloud service. Right? It'll give you the option of creating a new cloud service, which I didn't want to do. I want to be in the same cloud service, and then I can choose to be in the same availability set. And then I've got my VHD. I can attach my data disk, and away I go. So having created a data disk. And then you can, having done that, you can sort of VPN in, and let's VPN into my jump server. And this is going to be really interesting if this now decides that the password I've already used on here is common. Okay. Maybe I should. Do you know what? It was telling me to use the video, wasn't it? So this is decided. Anyway, I was going to VPN into the jump server. I'm not, because the network connection's gone down. It's very interesting. I should have just stuck with that last video, but there is no time to go over it again. So let's just sum up. And really, what I want to do was start this with saying, let's look at the difference between the AD, as in on-prem AD, and the Microsoft Azure AD, or the MAD AD. Remember, if you're thinking about federating and working with lots of different partner applications and so on, and you can actually create a My Apps portal for your users. So they can go to My Apps, they log in, they get the content that's been delivered to them, and then they can actually access it through there. So really think of it as an adjunct to your own AD. And if you're running Office 365, obviously you've got it already. So this is just the next extension. And then the reasons for deploying, well, I think you have to have justifiable reasons. Don't just deploy it for the sake of deploying it. Think about why you're deploying it and the best way of deploying it. And then I think we've covered the sort of design consideration option. And step by step, and what we've discovered is that we need a non-common password, whatever that might be. And consultancy available on request, and please don't forget to fill in the evaluations. And thank you for coming to the session. Thank you. And it-